Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony will play its final outdoor performance of the fall this Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at One Oak Field in a concert they call Triple Play, featuring the Symphony No. 4 by Johannes Brahms, the Scottish Fantasy by Max Bruch, and an overture by Mozart. My guest today is the guest conductor for the concert, Sarah Hicks, who is the principal conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra's Live at Orchestra Hall series, which encompasses a wide range of music, traditional pop performances, jazz, world music, Broadway classics, movie scores, and more. In addition, she's guest conducted with many of the nation's finest orchestras and with orchestras throughout Europe and Asia, and collaborated with artists ranging from most traditional classical artists to performers like Sting and the rapper Dessa, the latter of whom collaborated on an album with Hicks this past year. Hicks is also a specialist in conducting live film scores with performances of the film. She premiered the Pixar in Concert program and the live-to-film version of Disney's Coco, which is currently showing on Disney+. She'll lead the Tulsa Symphony this Sunday at 3 o'clock at One Oak Field, and she is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Sarah Hicks, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Last month, as the Tulsa Symphony played one of the first full orchestral concerts with an audience on Labor Day weekend, very shortly after, you conducted among the first concerts indoors with an audience with the Dallas Symphony Brass and Percussion. I know it wasn't business as usual, but it was closer to business as usual than we've seen in some time. What was that experience like?
It was surreal in some senses because it does feel like business as usual. It's an orchestra I know very well. I've been there many times. But, you know, here we are in masks and there's hand sanitizer everywhere backstage and, you know, there's plexiglass between the players. So in that sense, it was, you know, kind of disturbing to not have everything be as I imagined or remembered it. But by the same token, just being on the podium, it just felt like coming home. And, you know, you wonder as a performer what it's going to feel like after 6 months not doing what you were trained to do and have been doing for 20 years. But it's like riding a bicycle, I suppose. It felt utterly comfortable and wonderful. So it was a wonderful way to come back to performing. And I think really necessary for us performers and our psyches, because this is what we do. We want to perform for people and bring some light and joy. And to not be able to do that has been really difficult.
And that was your first concert since say February or early March?
March. I think my last concert was right before San Francisco went into lockdown, I think 2 days before. Mm-hmm. So
what is a conductor, and I know your spouse is also a musician, what have you done over the course of 6 months?
Well, my spouse is actually an ex-musician, but he understands, you know, what musicians go through. I mean, I explored a lot of other sides of myself. I increased my participation in social media. I spent more time on Instagram and Facebook. I started a YouTube channel. I started creating video content about things that I did in person, conducting history, you know, an introduction to score reading. I did a lot of virtual online projects. I started an interview series with a lot of the amazing performers, musicians, artists, and others that I know that was on Instagram Live, and I posted on YouTube. And I've been doing some music-related but not performance-related projects in development with various companies. So, you know, I took the time as, well, I can't be on the podium. So what else can I do where I can be creative and do things for people that, you know, connects us all together and shares information and, you know, brings some joy and compassion into the world? So that's what I focused on, and hopefully I was able to accomplish some of those things.
Well, you certainly will have a chance to do that this weekend with the Tulsa Symphony, playing Brahms Symphony No. 4 and music by Bruch and Mozart. I imagine it's going to feel good to be in front of a full orchestra.
I'm really excited, and the Tulsa Symphony is great, and I can't. Our first rehearsal is tonight, so I'm really excited.
Tell us a little about this concert. What do you like about it? For one, you're playing a piece of music I don't think doesn't get performed that often, even though it's by Mozart. And that is the overture to The Abduction from the Seraglio, which, you know, if you play a Mozart overture on a concert program, unless you're playing the opera, you're usually playing Magic Flute or The Marriage of Figaro. Mm-hmm. Maybe occasionally Don Giovanni.
Yes, that's true. I mean, this is from, I think, a an opera written in 1782, if I remember correctly. It's a chiming overture. It probably sort of lacks the emotional heft of other ones, or, you know, the grand structure of other ones. But it basically is, the opera is about Turks and Turkish captivity. It's about a harem. So there is a lot of levity to it. But it's also very colorful because he sort of took what they perceived in the 18th century to be Turkish music and these triangles and these symbols and created these sounds. So it's a little bit different from all the other Mozart overtures, but I think it's a lot of fun. I wish it would be played more. I think it's just a little bit on the lighter side.
Yeah, it does have a very great sense of lightness to it. And mm-hmm. at the ending of it, it sort of predates Beethoven because it has one of those endings where, is it over? Is it over?
Right.
Is it over? Is it over?
There's more. Yet there's more. Exactly.
And of course, there's also this middle section, which is, it's you know, it's very light, buoyant, and very Mozart-y, and except with the cymbals that are going constantly. And then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. it just changes directions in the middle.
It does. And then it sounds more like an aria a little bit. And it's mm-hmm. slow, and it's in three, and it's a completely different character. So, you know, again, with Mozart, he's able to create these shifts in emotions and shifts in colors. And this is a sort of a brilliant example of that. So maybe not as lightweight as we imagine, even though the music is light.
Well, why don't we hear a little bit of that? This will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony with my guest conductor Sarah Hicks, the Mozart middle section from the overture from the Abduction from the Seraglio. It's music by Mozart. My guest is Sarah Hicks, who will be conducting that piece with the Tulsa Symphony Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at One Oak Field, the second concert by the symphony at our downtown baseball park. Have you ever performed at a baseball park before?
I don't think so. I've actually done a bunch of outdoor venues and certainly stadium concerts, but not a baseball field in particular. So this might be my first one.
All right. You have performed outside and in stadiums. Can you give us an example of what you've done?
Sure. Well, I actually went on tour with Sting in 2011. And so that was the 3 months of playing stadiums all over Europe, and including, I think we were in St. Petersburg playing to a crowd of almost 100,000 between in the square in between the Winter Palace and the Hermitage. So, yes, I'm used to playing to large venues and big crowds, although I don't think I'll ever conduct in front of 100,000 people again. That seems to be a pretty extreme circumstance, but yeah. I'm really looking forward to being on a baseball field. That's going to be a first for me.
Right. Well, also on the program will be the Scottish Fantasy of Max Bruch, one of a number of pieces he wrote for violin and orchestra. He seemed to like to do that.
He did. And this one is sort of different in the sense that there's four movements and they're all basically based on a Scottish folk tune, which is kind of interesting because he actually never had visited Scotland before he wrote this, but he does manage to capture the feeling of, you know, the moor and the mists and also these wonderful Scottish dances. So capturing both of those feelings of Scotland. And so I think it's really atmospheric. It's a virtuosic piece for violin, and there's just a lot of fun stuff for the orchestra as well. So I haven't done this piece since I was in school over 20 years ago. So it's sort of fun to come back to something that you haven't looked at for a long time.
What's the process for going back to something you say, you know, I haven't looked at this in 20 years? What do you do on a piece like that?
I try to remember what I did before. And, you know, after 20-something years, it's hard to remember something. But, you know, you reacquaint yourself with something. It's, you know, if you read a book 20 years ago, you would you know, remember basically the plot and some of the characters, but the details would be lost. So it's a matter of going back and remembering those details and making them fresh again.
And I would imagine if you hadn't spent time with a piece for 20 years ago, you would look at it and you'd say you would be looking at it through new, more experienced eyes. You might see different things than you saw 20 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, just as you said, bringing in the experience of having conducted violin concertos and more of Brooks' works, and just in general to say, oh, that's really interesting. I anticipate this happening, or look at that little harmonic change, or look at what's happening in this really colorful accompaniment that I might not have seen way back when. So, it, you know, it's always a process of discovery. And I think any conductor would say throughout their careers, 50 years of performing Brahms, they'll still find something new in it because that's the nature of music.
Well, before we talk a little bit about the Brahms, why don't we hear a little bit of the Max Brooks' A Scottish Fantasy, which will be performed by the concertmaster, Rosita Gosa, Sunday afternoon. Let's hear a little bit of the last movement. And one of the things I think that's a little tricky about this piece, and I think of the last movement, because it has that sort of a few moments of hesitation that happens with this particular melody that's sort of peculiar to this Scottish tune. It's almost like there's just a bit of hesitancy. It's almost, in a way, like stylized Viennese waltzes, you know, where, mm-hmm. you know, you can play it straight or you can play it the way they do it in Vienna.
Right.
And I assume you have to do the same with this piece of Scottish music.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I guess we call it if you want to swing something. And I know it's not jazz, but orchestra players swing too. And that's, you know, that's bending the rhythm a little bit to make it more characteristic.
Well, why don't we hear a little bit of the final movement of the Scottish Fantasy by Max Brooks? That's music by Max Brooks, The Scottish Fantasy, which will be conducted by my guest today, guest conductor Sarah Hicks. She's the principal conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra's Live at Orchestra Hall series, a very talented guest conductor with many, many orchestras, and she'll be leading the Tulsa Symphony in the Brahms Symphony No. 4, also works by Brooks and Mozart, Sunday afternoon at 3 at One Oak Field, the final concert outdoors until springtime with the Tulsa Symphony. The Brahms Symphony No. 4 is a great piece of music. It's got every single movement has these beautiful tunes, you know, beautiful variations in the final movement, the Passacaglia. What are the things you like to bring out in a Brahms performance, and especially of the Symphony 4?
Brahms, I find to be an interesting composer because he can be both lyrical and muscular at the same time. So there's both of those energies going on. The first movement is incredibly lyrical. And beautiful. And one of those symphonies where you think of a symphony, a first movement, as having some sort of big introduction before the tune starts. But this, the tune just begins as if it's been going on and we're just entering upon it. So I love that movement. The second movement is absolutely gorgeous and has so many different moods. The third movement is this incredible sort of bumptious, really fast presto. And you hear, as we heard in the Mozart, the tinkling of triangles, which is, this is the only Brahms symphony with a triangle. So that's a really wonderful color. And as you said, the last movement, the Passacaglia, a very sort of, you know, ancient classical music form that is used for this, you know, this incredible expression with a full orchestra. And it has this bass part that keeps going, and it's 8-bar bass phrase. And that's what the whole movement is based around. But you wouldn't imagine that it's limited by this structure. It is a whole universe unto itself. So it's one of my favorite Brahms symphonies to conduct.
In the opening of the symphony, it's almost like there's a series of questions through a melody almost.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
It's unusual in the way it starts for anything from the 19th century, I think. It just goes, here's a melody, boom.
Yep, exactly. There it is. And it's as if we're happening upon it, I think. And it's always been going on. And I like to think of music is always there. And then we happen to turn our ear towards it. And there it is. And it's beautiful. So to me, the opening of the symphony is just like that.
Well, my guest, Sarah Hicks, is a very versatile conductor. One of the things that's very interesting, I want to hear about the Live at Orchestra Hall series that you do with the Minnesota Orchestra and have done for a number of years, because it strikes me as it's not a pop series per se, but it's sort of everything else that an orchestra does besides playing your typical classics, you know, overture, concerto, symphony program. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about Live at Orchestra Hall.
Well, we've been able to do a lot of interesting things. We do have artists who would, you know, fit under the pops category. We've, you know, worked with people like Roseanne Cash for one of her very first shows with orchestra. We do movies with live orchestra like a lot of orchestras do. And then I've been able to do things like we actually produced an album with the rap artist Dessa that dropped last November. Mm-hmm. And it's we're in the midst of our Grammy push. So, you know, creating projects like that, I've also done a concert where I've had chefs on stage and they cook and we have repertoire that is related to their, you know, what they're cooking or what their preferences are. I think we did Dukas, the Sorcerer's Apprentice. If you all remember that, that's from Disney's Fantasia where Mickey has a, well, he, you know, there's a lot of brooms and a lot of water involved. So go see Fantasia. But in this case, we had some very experimental cooks who cooked this enormous noodle of pasta on stage. Much like the endless line of broomsticks, there was an endless piece of pasta. So, you know, creating experiences like that, I think, that bring together different art forms, because cooking is an art form, different genres of music, and different ways of encountering the orchestra. I think it's been a lot of fun for me. And I really want to show people how amazing the sounds of an orchestra are, and how they relate to our lives and how they make everything better. So that's sort of the intent of Live at Orchestra Hall.
Do you find you see the same audience that you would see for a classics concert, or is it a very different audience?
It can be very different. It can be the same. Some of our classical subscription subscribers came to our concert with Dessa, the hip-hop artist, because the orchestra is playing. You know, some mm-hmm. of our film enthusiasts come to the classical concerts, and a lot of people who come to see the other things just want to come to see the other things. So I think it's really important to be able to serve all those different parts of our community and to have everyone feel welcome in the hall and to have a great time with the orchestra.
I know one of the things you are very good at, and it's a very difficult skill, is doing the film score with the film going on. I know you've done a bunch of them at this mm-hmm. particular point. What are some of the skill sets involved in, you know, it's like you're a slave to the film when you're conducting, because any phrase you want to take a little bit of time with, it's pretty difficult because the film ain't going to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely true. And, you know, we're working as conductors off of a film that the audience doesn't see. We have a conductor video, which has even more information, has streamers and punches and clicks and measure counts and digital counts. And so it's highly technical. It's a very different skill to learn. I'm a specialist in that area, so I've, you know, done most of 80% of the movie content that's out there. And I always describe it as playing a demented video game, because you need to sort of line up two very different things. You need to line up 80 people who have all their own ideas and how they produce sound, and then you have this immutable source, the film, to which, you know, it's my job to make things line up at the most important points. And as we say, make music in between those points, because you can be a little bit more loose around the edges, but you have to be, you know, quite experienced to be able to know how to do that without creating a disaster on stage, and we definitely don't want that.
Now, how did you get started doing that, doing film scores, the live film scores?
It started very early on. I was an early adopter, so I guess 11 years ago, when films like, it was, you know, you had choices from like Psycho and Bride of Frankenstein, The Wizard of Oz, and it was older films and not really technically developed. I premiered Pixar in concert, I think in 2012, mm-hmm. Which was clips of all the Pixar films up to that point. And from that point, I developed a relationship with Disney Pixar and also with just the film genre specifically. And, as you know, those things pile up as you become known as one of the first people doing it. And I just kept doing it because I love film. I love film music. And I think it's a good entry point for people to realize how much orchestral sound is part of the cinematic sound. And so it's really a part of our lives, and just to remind them of how it's there and how exciting it is.
Now, anybody who's ever seen Fantasia, seeing it is one thing, hearing it with a live orchestra is another thing. Because for one thing, I don't know if it was a part of the technical issues of the day. The score is played on the original Fantasia numbers. It seems like it's played a lot faster than most conductors would normally take it.
Yeah, some of the tempi are very weird. Tchaikovsky had his own take on some of these pieces. So that is a challenge to, you know, because we have our own interpretations and how we hear the music, to be a slave to that. But again, it's interesting because in Fantasia, there are certain points where the music absolutely needs to line up. And there could be spans of 30 or 40 seconds where it doesn't necessarily. We just need to end up in the right place. So I've learned how to sort of wiggle between those points so that it can feel more natural for the orchestra and for myself.
Now, one of the things you've done is in recent years is record the orchestra cues for some of these live musicals. I'm thinking of Little Mermaid when they did the live version of that. That's a completely different animal too, because I assume you're not recording it while they're singing it on the live performance. They have the orchestra tracks ahead of time, I guess.
Well, we recorded the tracks for them, so they were working off of our tracks, our tracks are coordinated to the movie. So, you know, it's a multi-part because it was live and also
animated.
There were the movie sections, and then there were live singers. So, I mean, that was an incredibly complicated process that, you know, it took weeks for us to do our part, you know, and it usually takes a couple of days. So, and then they bring in the singers and the costuming and the puppets. If you haven't seen it, it's an incredible production. They did a wonderful job with that. But yeah, it's fun to be part of. I mean, in that case, we were in the background. We pre-recorded everything before production started. So that's one way of approaching it. And then I did a project. We did Coco live at the Hollywood Bowl. Right. And that was recorded by Event Vision. It's streaming on Disney Plus, just the live music portions of that. So that was a whole different process in itself. So there are a lot of directions that this kind of, you know, live to film and these projects go in. And it's really exciting because it's way more fun to see people playing and hear a live orchestra playing as you watch your favorite films. It just brings another layer to it. And I think it creates more excitement and you can really get into it a lot more. At least I do.
My guest today is Sarah Hicks. She's the guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony's concert this Sunday afternoon. She's the principal conductor of Minnesota Orchestra's Innovative Live at Orchestra Hall series, and she'll be leading the symphony in Brahms Symphony No. 4 and works by Brook and Mozart Sunday afternoon at 3 at One Oak Field. And it's the final concert of the fall for the Tulsa Symphony outdoors, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Earlier in our conversation, you said, you know, while you were off for these 6 months, you were trying to master virtual performances, you know, obviously via some Zoom-like structure. I imagine that is an interesting skill, because the few things I've done with that, it's just really, really hard because of internet connections and everything you have to do to line things up. Tell me a little bit about that process. What sort of things have you done during the 6 months virtually?
Well, I mean, a lot of it was, as we did initially, and you saw a lot of orchestras doing this, we would actually record things by click track and have individual musicians, you know, essentially playing their own part and then aligning that afterwards in the studio. And there are still people out doing that. It is tremendously challenging for, you know, more than a couple of people to be playing at the same time. There is software now, I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, that makes that much easier. But it is a challenge to be separated and, you know, on this virtual medium to be playing the same thing at the same time. So I think a lot of us are still working within the creating content with click tracks and having multiple people record on their own time. So it's virtual, but not live virtual, although there are people trying that as well.
Well, we look forward to hearing the concert this Sunday. It should be a really good concert. Brahms, Brook, Mozart, the three great pieces. And we'll look forward to seeing you. This is your first time with the Tulsa Symphony, is that correct?
It is my first time, and first time in Tulsa as well. So yeah. it's a week of firsts, and it's great to be here.
Now, I know COVID has also given you, you're a very versatile musician and conductor. You've composed your own works at one point in your life, and COVID has now given you a new role. As I understand, for the Minnesota Orchestra, you're going to be their television host because they can't do concerts with an audience. So they're going to do television broadcasts for a part of their subscription season. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. We actually had our first broadcast 2 weeks ago. I believe it was October 2nd. Our next one is October 23rd. And yes, I am TV hosting. It's something I've done a little bit, but not this much. So it's live broadcast. It's also live streamed on the Minnesota Orchestra website and on their Facebook page, and also I think YouTube as well, and broadcast on Minnesota Public Radio. So it's a whole new role. But, you know, it's great to be in front of an ensemble I know really well to talk about the music that my friends are making to a community I've been a part of for a long time. So it's really a pleasure for me to be able to play that role and to, you know, share music.
Yeah. Well, I know Tulsa Symphony, we're about to make an announcement where during the winter, it looks like they'll be doing concerts for broadcast on our radio stations here. And so I'm really excited about that. It's a great way to keep music in the public eye because it's so difficult right now. And it's so difficult for musicians. They want to perform. And it's just, we're at a very difficult time in our history.
It really is a challenging time. But, you know, I hope with these, you know, the sort of technological means of broadcasting and live streaming that we still will be able to create live music. And even if you're far away, I think live music is very different because, you know, it's being created right here and right now, and you can't duplicate it. It's live. So there's something really special about that. And I know a lot of us can't wait for that to become a regular part of life again.
Well, is there a performance you're looking forward to after you leave Tulsa? I know it's, you know, everything is like, it may happen or may not at this point. Is there something you're looking forward to doing later in the year?
You know, it's really hard to say. There's so many things that are up in the air. I was looking forward to concerts with the WR Cologne, the Cologne Radio Orchestra in Germany. Mm-hmm. I had a concert with them that I'm really looking forward to. There are a lot of other concerts overseas with orchestras that I was looking forward to, being back with my home orchestra in San Francisco. I mean, just, there's so many projects that have been put on hold. We don't even know if they're going to happen in the spring. They might be next fall. So I'm sort of trying to focus on, you know, one day at a time, one thing at a time, one project at a time, to enjoy this week in Tulsa and to see what the future brings and, you know, to be flexible and optimistic and hopeful.
All right. Well, we hope a lot of folks, as many who can come out in a socially distanced concert, come out Sunday afternoon to hear you conduct Brahms, Brooke, and Mozart. Sarah, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Guest conductor Sarah Hicks speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The principal conductor of Minnesota Orchestra's Live at Orchestra Hall series will be the guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphonies program Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at One Oak Field, featuring the Brahms Symphony No. 4, Max Bruch's Scottish Fantasy with soloist Rosita Zagosa, and Mozart's overture from the Abduction from the Seraglio. For information and concert details, visit tulsasymphony.org. Well, we're going to leave you with music from the Brahms Symphony No. 4. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.